Lindsay Atwood, and the Steven Universe podcast is going to Homeworld. We're going to learn about Homeworld culture and its gem inhabitants from creator Rebecca Sugar and former executive producer Ian Jones-Cordy. We'll discover what inspired the various gem classes and how their roles and functions not only work with each other, but within the gem's identities. Co-executive producer Joe Johnston and storyboard supervisor Hilary Florido returned to give us a little bit of insight on Homeworld's development. And Erica Luttrell, the voice of Pat Paracha, is also going to stop by to talk about the lovable character with her amazing ability to predict the future after it already happens. So let's start today with Rebecca Sugar and Ian JQ. Thank you guys so much for coming and joining me.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So today we're talking about Homeworld gems. So can you just tell us, like, I guess, early development and, like, as you slowly paced out looking at each of these new gems from Homeworld, what you had in mind in terms of, like, their society?
Well, I'll say what I can, because I feel like there's a lot to still learn about them.
There's a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot, for sure.
We don't know.
But the thing that was always going to be true about Homeworld society is that it is all based on conformity, and there's a huge stress on appearances. Everyone has a very specific role, and their role is their function, and their function is who they are. The way they look is what they do is who they are. Like, there is no room for individuality on Homeworld at all. That has informed sort of or just the little peaks that we've seen at it, I think.
Yeah.
That's, you know, and also the way Peridot talks about it, you know, everybody has, you know, they're not individuals. You are your gem type, and you are what you're for. There's like a Carl Jung thing about persona. It talks about how dangerous it is to kind of become, to have your identity be your job, because somebody else can control whether or not you're successful at being yourself. Anyway, that's Homeworld.
Yeah, I remember being confused when we first learned that there are a bunch of different kinds of each gem. Like, there's a bunch of different pearls or whatever, and there's a bunch of different amethysts and all that. I was like, how are they gonna, like, differentiate? You know, how do they keep track of everyone? And, I mean, you have your designation, but really you are, like you said, you are your role. So, like, it's not really relevant.
Yeah, it's not supposed to be.
You as an individual.
Yeah.
That episode, Back to the Barn, was one that I always think about when I think of Homeworld, even though it's, like, so far removed, just because that's when we learned that pearls are, like, supposed to be that servant class. That was, like, the first episode I watched live, and I was so struck by that. Like, when did you guys decide on, like, Pearl's role and, like, the whole structure?
Oh, that was really early on. Oh, my gosh, I have some ancient drawings of that interaction. I think they're so old that I wasn't even drawing. I think Peridot was still she didn't have limb hands. That's how old those drawings are, like early Peridot drawings of her confronting Pearl about being exceptionally fancy.
And I remember having a lot of early ideas about what exactly the gems were, like what their functions were in gem society. And that really played into that episode.
Yeah.
And it was sort of something we had been building up in the characters' personalities to that point.
It's such a shame because, well, I think that's so rough because Pearl got to live, you know, in Steven's eyes for so long without him knowing that at all.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's just like going to be a part of how he sees her. I think it's something, I mean, Garnet is like that too, where there's a lot of weight in Garnet's mind of what it means for her to be a fusion that she doesn't necessarily want Steven to have until she thinks he's old enough to handle it. But he's not from Homeworld, so he doesn't really have a lot of know what a lot of that weight is.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't have the hang-ups that they have.
Yeah, but they can't. That's not easy for them to get.
Exactly, because they've been living in it for thousands of years. So,
yeah, and for, I think, you know, for Pearl to know that Steven knows that, even if he doesn't know what that means, it's like it really changes everything.
Yeah.
I think she really enjoyed, I don't think, I know because I write for the show.
Because you made it, you know.
She really, you know, and I think Garnet too. Garnet enjoyed that Steven just thought of her as her own person.
Yeah, you know? There was a lot of simplicity for them, and I think Steven almost, you know, I think they began to understand that it was a way of sort of starting over.
But there's also I think the thing that's nice about when the show goes on is that as much as those truths make them feel really vulnerable, even if Stephen doesn't have that understanding of it, they're able to be closer to him because he can understand a little better. He can understand why they're worried in a way that he couldn't before, and they're able to talk about it with someone who they know is just interested in how they feel about it. And that becomes really new. I think the thing that really is harsh about having that happen in Back to the Barn is that Pearl doesn't get to do that herself.
It kind of happens for her.
She's like outed. Yeah
Peridot is so
very rude.
She's very rude, but she cannot imagine a situation where someone wouldn't understand that just by looking at Pearl.
Right.
But she's completely, she has no concept of how they have been living, and there are things that just make sense to Peridot that she thinks makes sense to everyone, because she hasn't yet at that point figured out that different people have different experiences. That's something she has to figure out,
right,
like over the course of her arc. Yeah, and
that homeworld mindset.
I think too, the fact that she thinks that Pearl can't fight also is really frustrating, because it's sort of like, I don't know, Pearl's been fighting for so long. Well, this is also something that I think is interesting about Peridot and Bismuth, where they're kind of similar, which is that Bismuth will rib all of them about that stuff. It kind of like takes the tension out, because like Bismuth is very shoulder punchy about all of their things that they're supposed to be, because they're all so proud that they're not like that, whereas Peridot is just like very matter of fact about it.
Yep. It's she's very much like, this is just the way it is.
Yeah.
She's just annoyed that you're out of line. There's a lot of the other gems from Homeworld that it was really cool seeing, like, their functions. I think that one of them that I really liked to see was the Zircons.
Mm-hmm.
And there was so much fan art after that episode. It was really fun. their designs are so fun. But what do you think that, like, they, how do you feel they would fall in terms of rank?
I mean, they're pretty mid, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also they, you know, they're one of the types of gem that has a very specific function. So they sort of will end up in this space where they are servant gems to a very upper class of gem.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's really interesting in that way. You know, they wouldn't be, they're technically not like a grunt, like a soldier or something like that. But they're not
But they don't have any real power.
They don't have power. Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, especially their court system is
very flawed. Very kangaroo.
I think it was really fun seeing the at the human zoo, the Holly Blue was a really fun reveal on the Famethyst. Do you want to talk any about that?
Oh yeah, I mean Holly Blue's interesting because she's a quartz, but I think she feels like, because she's actually one of Blue Diamond's quartzes, that she has so much more clout there with Blue Diamond running the place than these sort of adopted pink quartzes that she's managing. And she gives them a lot of guff for being from Earth, because that's what she has over them. She's not. But at the end of the day, they're all the same type.
Yeah.
And so it's like,
and Holly also is like, she's got the sort of frustration of someone with a thankless assignment.
Yes, that too.
You know, and she takes that all off on the Famethyst, basically.
Yeah, she's not good. She's not a good person. But she's funny. Christy Petty is so good.
Yeah, she was hilarious.
She was really based off of the, there's this woman in Funny Face who sings this song called Think Pink. It's sort of spoken. She wants everything to be pink. And I think she was the actor who played that person was like a speech, like would help actors with that specific kind of speech. What is it? Is it called transatlantic?
I don't know.
Was it? This is very, anyway, whatever. Christine Petty is masterful at doing this very specific kind of voice. I just love it.
Yeah.
The voice was great. It was very striking in that episode, I feel like. Another homeworld gem that we've met is the rubies. And I think that it was interesting seeing, like, you know, you have to balance the comedic side of meeting homeworld gems, where it's like the rubies and you're like, oh, they're incompetent. Like, but, like, at the same time, they remain a threat, like homeworld at large.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, like, maintain that balance?
Oh, gosh. I guess that's tricky. I mean, I think the thing about like when Homeworld is sending out the rubies is that they can't really factor in the concept that the crystal gems will be the way they are when these people show up.
Right. They don't expect that they're going to have to go up against an intelligent adversary. Really.
Yeah. Gems don't understand creativity. Yeah. They don't understand it at all.
Yeah.
Like, the idea, they never prepped the rubies to go play baseball with yeah. a bunch of gems. They wouldn't know how to prepare for that.
Right.
I think, you know, they expect that, you know, when people understand that Homeworld is after them, that everything will work the way it's supposed to work, because everything's everyone is supposed to be how they're supposed to be and work how they're supposed to work, and they kind of don't plan for an outcome that involved anyone being creative in any way.
I also wager that, like, a lot of the life forms that the gems have dealt with up until this point have been just a lot easier to like, you know, corral and, you know, do whatever they want to.
Like the bird blob.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
from,
you know,
jungle.
I feel like when it comes to humans and also other gems, it's like they can be outmaneuvered in ways that they're not expecting.
Yeah, that they're not expecting. Mm-hmm. I think too, they, you know, with the rubies, the whole strength of the whole thing that makes rubies valuable to them is that they can combine.
Yeah,
you know, I think they're not expecting a single ruby to solve any given problem.
No.
Or even a team of single rubies. Like, when they face whatever they're going to face, they're going to turn into one huge adversary that will take care of the situation. That's why you don't... Ruby and Sapphire being together is extremely unusual, because you'd never send only one ruby to do anything.
Yep.
That's just not a thing. They're always in teams. It's really unusual for Ruby to be by herself. I don't know if we've been super explicit about that, but there's a Homeworld fact. Rubies are always in teams.
They travel in groups.
I think we might mention it in the answer book briefly.
Yeah, I think so.
That they are always in squads and groups.
Yeah.
And they're not, the fact that they have different personalities, I mean, they're not supposed to. So that's sort of like something that's flying under the radar.
Yeah.
Homeworld-wise. Like, people don't know. I don't think, you know, they're never going to be that cute in front of the diamonds. You know,
right.
they wouldn't show
Yeah, they
them.
Would be on their best behavior.
Yeah, but when they're alone, they're, yeah. you know, they can't help yeah. but be a little, you know.
The Ruby Squad is so fun.
I love them.
Yeah.
I love them. So, like, you talked about Ruby and Sapphire, and just sort of that, like, how Garnet is sort of, I guess, you know, like an anomaly to Homeworld, because Ruby, you know, first of all, Ruby being alone, and then second of all, meeting with Sapphire and, like, the concept of them being a fusion together. Can you talk about that, sort of, like, the taboo there?
Yeah. So the thing is, you know, if you're a gem, you are a certain type of gem. That gem is a certain color. It looks a certain way. It has a certain cut. That's your name. It's who you are. You know, if you have five rubies and they all combine, they become one huge ruby. They're still a ruby. Mm. If you have two topazes, they combine. They
right.
become a big topaz. They're still a topaz.
Yeah.
Everyone understands what a topaz is. When there's one, that's a topaz. When there's two, there's a topaz fusion. When Ruby and Sapphire combine, that is new. They change color. They're not red or blue. They're purple. They have two different types of gems, and now they've become a new person that isn't either of those gems.
Yeah.
And Homeworld is not okay with that, because they don't know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
When Homeworld gems saw a ruby and a sapphire combined, they wouldn't say that there's now a garnet standing in front of us. They wouldn't know what
right.
that gem is. They know what garnets are. They've seen garnets, and if two garnets combined, they'd make a garnet.
Yeah.
They don't understand that a ruby and a sapphire could make garnet. That's a decision that Garnet made for herself.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what she became.
Yeah.
That's the name that she arrived at.
Mm-hmm.
When two gems of two different colors and two different types combine, Homeworld doesn't know what that is, and they are not comfortable with that. They want to know who everyone is by looking at them and what their gem type is, what their job is. There are no gray areas like that for Homeworld.
Mm-hmm.
Rhodonite, fluorite, I mean, that, you know, those are gems that...
Oh, well, we're getting into the off colors.
Off colors. And that is why they're called off colors, because they're not... Fusions are pretty much automatically off colors if they're fusions of two different kinds of gems, because they're not the color that those two gems were when they started.
Yeah.
That's the thing about them. You could have a gem that's a defect and they came out off color because their coloration was slightly wrong or because their type is slightly mm-hmm. wrong. But if you're a fusion of two different types of gems, you're immediately going to be off color because your color changed.
Yeah.
It's just like totally... Mm-hmm. That's why it's so taboo. So fusion is not taboo as long as you become the same person.
Yeah. Being off color is taboo.
Being off color is taboo, and fusing with someone else who's different from you, you will become something different than the gender.
And the off colors were a group that I really wanted to be in the show.
Yeah. That was, Ion was championing that really hard, especially when you were leaving to do OKKO.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I promise I'll find a way to do this.
Mostly because in any like large society or system, you know, like Homeworld, there's always going to be people who are statistically improbable. I think that's true in the real world too. It's like people think about, you know, people who their existence is improbable and they're on the edge and the system basically has no place for them. And a lot of people's solution to that is be like, well, they deserve no support. They should just be thrown away in the trash. And basically, I wanted to know who those people were in Homeworld society, what they were like, especially because if gems on Earth had discovered fusion, if there had been gems on Earth who had defects or were different, it's like, well, that must have gone on Homeworld, and they must live a very difficult existence in a society that's not made for them. So that was one of the big reasons why we really wanted to have the off colors in the show.
Well, I'm glad you did. It was fun to meet them.
Yeah.
All right, guys, thank you so much for coming on and talking to me.
Absolutely.
All right, Steven Universe co-executive producer Joe Johnston and storyboard supervisor Hillary Florido are going to share their thoughts about Homeworld coming up. Came here looking
for American soul. It's that time of year, college hoops fans.
The NCAA tournament has arrived.
Don't miss a moment of the action on TBS, CBS, TNT, and True TV.
For the win! Incredible shot!
Download the March Madness Live app to watch every game live, even when you're on the go.
Everybody looking to punch a ticket to the Final Four.
Follow the action all the way through to the National Championship game April 2nd on TBS.
All right, I am here with Hillary Florido and Joe Johnston, who are a storyboard supervisor and co-executive producer, respectively. Right, guys?
Yes.
Thank you guys so much for coming back.
We are back.
Ain't no thing.
Here we are. We never left.
Okay, so, yeah. That's one of my favorite moments from, I think Lamar said that.
Oh, he did?
And, yeah, after we did an interview, he started with that. It was really foreboding, actually, when you listen back. Oh, it sounds like they're just always there, you know?
Yeah, he's here in the room with us. Hey, Lamar, how you doing?
He never leaves. So today we're going to talk about Homeworld. So the first thing I thought about was, like, you know, especially early in the show, when we were boarding, or, I mean, not me, but, like, when you guys were doing episodes like Back to the Barn, Sworn to the Sword, Marble Madness, there's a bunch of those that sort of drop these, like, little... like hints and glimpses of like, oh, you know, this is what Homeworld is like, and people were piecing them together, but Steven didn't know. So what was it like sort of dropping those little tidbits in?
It was fun.
Yeah.
It was really a really fun thing to do. We were talking about Homeworld very, very early in the show. Hillary, I can't remember, were you there for the first like writers meeting that we had?
They talked about Homeworld?
Yeah. It was right after we finished Ocean Gem. And we were just starting to talk about, like, what was happening.
Was that 1B?
That was the start of 1B, I guess.
I started 1B.
Yeah.
I feel like I probably was.
Yeah, we had a day where we were talking about sort of the direction of what we wanted to do going forward. It was right after we got in the 1B pickup.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe we weren't even done with Ocean Gem at that point. This was 5 years ago, so who knows?
But yeah,
back then we were already laying the groundwork for a sort of go to Homeworld somewhere in space heist arc, which is what the zoo arc became. The early ideas were about Greg getting kidnapped and taken to Homeworld or Steven, respectively, something like that. I remember really pushing for, like, let's go to Homeworld at the end of season one. that would have been way too early. So it turned into the plan that we ended up doing, which was sort of seeding things just very, very slowly in the show and just building it up and up and up and up, which is what we were already doing on the show with Steven's powers and who the gems were. Mm-hmm. All of the first 26 episodes are all about who the gems are and where they're from. And we just do that very slowly. They have these powers. When they poof, they turn back into gems. The gems are these things. They're the actual core of their being. The monsters are also gems. It was all about laying all that groundwork. And then when we got to there, it was like, okay, now where do gems come from? What is their society and their culture like?
I felt like the culture was always seeded because it was a part of the characters themselves and how the structure they had to break out of to become themselves. Yeah, I do like that I feel like every episode, there's a little nugget.
Mm-hmm. We always tried.
There is no true filler episode. Because there's always a nugget.
Yeah.
Maybe it's at the last second of the episode. Yep. But
we put it there.
It's always been a really slow burn. Because then it gets really satisfying when you put the pieces together or if you predict them and you're right.
Yeah, and we always wanted the audience to be able to, like, put those pieces together themselves. We're never trying to, like, we gotcha. We're never trying to, like, really fool the audience into thinking one thing. Well, maybe we are sometimes. But for the most part, we're like,
I think it's always in the service of the point of view of Steven.
Yeah.
Like, because you're watching everything through Steven. So if Steven believes one thing, you're inclined to believe that. And then once he finds out new information, like, you're finding it out as well.
Yeah.
Like, same time. So. Mm-hmm.
So nothing just comes, like, out of left field or anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a good way to do it. You talked about dropping those little nuggets in. When you're boarding scenes with, like, gem or homeworld structures or technology or whatever, like, it could have been great. There's that staircase that raises up or the giant hands in Marble Madness with Peridot. So, like, what was it, like, how do you guys approach, how much freedom do you have when you have to board scenes with that kind of technology? Like, are there, like, guidelines for Homeworld does this, but they don't do this? Or were you kind of just making it up and then sort of basing it off of that?
Back then, we were just making it up on the fly. And since we're a board-driven show, and the board artists are always encouraged to just invent whatever they want to invent to tell the story that they, well, the part of the story that they want to tell. So things like the staircase were just like, that's just cool. Let's just find, like, cool space-floating things to do.
But I remember that being pitched. That went over really well. It was cool.
And then there's other things like the upside-down pyramid in Sirius Steven, especially the mural that's inside that pyramid and what that pyramid is, were all sort of done before we sort of had a firm understanding of what the lore of the show is. Mm-hmm. In terms of, like, what these structures are and what they're for and what they do. So there was a version of that mural that was completely different that I did. Mm-hmm. And then that Rebecca ended up revising as, like, because the core, like, big story of the show was really being invented right around then. And so we had to go back in and sort of adjust.
And not reveal it all in a mural.
Yeah.
Like we said, nuggets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just nuggets. You can't, like, just paint it all on the ceiling for anybody to look at.
That mural had so many theories.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Yes.
People were poring over every little detail. I love that, though. It makes
more
satisfying.
We'll be able to talk about that at a different time. We can talk about the full story
of that
mural.
And it'll be really exciting.
When that day comes.
But then, like, the other part of this is there was an effort to differentiate the sort of timeline for Homeworld through the architecture. So all of the structures that you see on Earth are from Era 1, and they're all very classical and Art Deco with, you know, these Roman column-looking things.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we slowly introduced Homeworld, it's a much different architecture because the society has had thousands of years to decide to build their buildings a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Lloyd Wright has been dead for, like, a really long time.
Yeah.
It's just fact.
We gotta adapt. Mm-hmm. Gotta evolve. I love it. Then you go to, like, the newer episodes, like The Trial and Off Colors, that mm-hmm. are, like... So, like, what era would that be?
Homeworld lives in... Currently, they live in Era 2.
Oh, okay.
Era 1 was all of Homeworld before the war and their colonization. And then since the war and since...
Stuff happened.
Mm-hmm. They've moved on to Era 2, which has become much more rigid, much more controlled.
It's pretty sleek.
Yep. And that's that postmodern look that we've...
Aesthetic,
yes.
What's it like when you guys get to finally board out what your what Homeworld looks like in the episodes, The Trial and Off Colors, for viewers? What were your thoughts then?
I feel like at the time it was like, is this right? Are we doing it right? is this how we want it to be? This makes sense. Yeah, okay.
It was always something that always felt really far in the future that we were going to do. And then suddenly it was happening.
It was the future.
It was.
Yeah. We're in it.
Here we are in the future. And it was always just very, very, we didn't know how to feel. We still don't know how to feel. Like it's.
Right.
Like the other thing is like we do these episodes and then it'll be a while before they air. And so when they do finally air, it's like, oh yeah, wait, people haven't seen that yet? Oh yeah, yeah. We did that a while ago. We've already moved on to other things. That's kind of like for all of the big moments in the show, that's kind of always how they felt. It's like, oh wow, we're here. Mm-hmm. But then it takes a while till the audience gets to see it. And by then we've moved on.
right.
We're seeing some other episode new now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Seeing someone new.
Yeah.
It's over.
It's like two different, it's crazy thinking about how you have to keep track of all of the stuff, like so many different timelines and points of view mm-hmm. in terms of thinking.
Well, just one point of view, so.
Right. I mean more like in terms of like the point of view of the viewer versus like guys having seen everything.
Yeah, sometimes it is hard to keep track of like, wait, do they know this, right? Yes, okay, yes, we said this in that episode, and so they know this, and so we can say this, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what I'm thinking is like, because like we talked about, you know, you sort of drop these little tidbits in all these episodes. And so in order to like remember everything that's been shown, it's like, well, I guess I'll just rewatch all of the Steven Universe to make this next episode, you know, like, and like, obviously you can't do that every single time. So is it like tough keeping track?
Yeah, I don't do it. I don't know if I'm notorious, but I consistently ask, is that an episode I did? Did we do this?
I'm consistently mixing up names of shows. Like I can't remember episode names sometimes.
But you know what happens in episodes.
Yes.
Right.
You always end up like, it's that one episode with Amethyst and she does the thing. Oh yeah, that episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'm the one who's like, oh yeah, okay, that episode.
I mean, to be fair, it's a lot. Like,
yeah,
there's,
it is a lot.
You know. And it's been going on for so long, too.
Yeah.
And I have to, like, remember my social security, too. Like,
yeah, I know.
Like, priorities, man.
How are they expecting me to do all of this? How did you guys approach with the zoo arc? Like, we touched on that a little bit, but it introduced a lot more characters and stuff, too, like the Thamethyst and Holly Blue.
Yeah. What's been really nice is when we've brought in Homeworld Gems, they've been our vehicle for... really introducing Homeworld because the main gems don't really want to talk about Homeworld. They don't really associate themselves with Homeworld. So when we get characters like Peridot or Holly Blue in, they become our vehicle for just dumping exposition on how things are, you know, done on Homeworld. And I guess with Holly, that was really the first time, well, not really the first time, but another opportunity to show sort of the hierarchy of gems and gem culture, and also really the first time showing individual gems interacting with the diamonds and how they treat the diamonds and how they revere them. And there's a lot of that in Peridot, with Peridot's arc in Back to the Barn, and it could have been great. But yeah, Holly Blue was another, and the zoo arc was another opportunity to just reinforce that and show that off more.
Yeah, it's always more effective to... I mean, you joke about dumping exposition, but we're to show rather than tell. Like,
yes.
If you just heard Pearl dropping facts in the kitchen, you'd be like, all right, yeah, okay, this doesn't have any gravity. But when you're interacting with a new gem, the threat who's moving and acting in ways that, like, you're unfamiliar with. You have to fill in the gaps and context clues.
Yeah, yeah, and that's
right.
The thing that's the reason that works in Back to the Barn is because even though we are just talking about concepts, like Pearl is one of many gems, and the concept of gems having multiple types, and also like there's many of the same type, like those were new, like very big concepts to just suddenly drop. But we have Peridot there, who is acting like a gem who is above a Pearl and trying to give orders and expecting Pearl to act a certain way. So we have that to sort of reinforce, I guess, the theme and the plot and the facts, basically, of what Gem Society is.
I remember, I'd forgotten that Back to the Barn was the episode where they talked about having multiple pearls. That was crazy. That was the first episode I saw live. And I remember vividly, like, in my dorm room being like, what? What? There's more? But it was a good moment.
Yeah, and then we have a robot battle. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The whole it's the whole package. It's got it all. That's what I like. Okay, cool. Thank you guys so much for coming on and talking to me.
Yeah.
No sweat.
Yeah.
And coming up, we have Erica Luttrell, the voice of fan favorite Pad Paracha. I am here with Erica Luttrell, and thank you so much for coming.
It is so my pleasure.
So, what is it like playing the role of the off-color gem Pad Paracha?
It's hilarious.
Yeah.
First off, I find it, like, challenging not to laugh at my own dialogue sometimes, because we'll be shooting it sometimes with the other actors. Sometimes it's just you, but typically it's you and at least one or two other people, and sometimes it's the whole cast, depending. And so all of that stuff has already happened also for us in the recording booth. We'll see all the storyboards, and we'll have recorded all of the things that have happened. And then Pat Parash will be like, I predict that Lars will. I'm like, but we just, it's so funny. And they're all laughing, and I can't, you know, it'd be challenging in that regard. But it's fun. I mean, she's adorable. I love how accepting everybody around her is of her uniqueness. You know, they're just like, yeah, you know, it's fine.
She's doing her best. Yeah.
She's doing her best. It's very sweet.
You're doing amazing. You're doing amazing, and never change.
Never change who you are, sweetheart. Just never. That's right. Exactly.
Yeah. Would you find it more difficult do you find it more difficult to play Pad Paracha than Sapphire because of the whole laughing thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah. To a certain extent, it is more challenging. Also because there's like a comedic element to her, and there's like a comedic timing element to what she's doing.
Right.
So there's that challenge too, because you don't want to say it. Although I suppose editors have some responsibility for where they place the line anyway, so but I think because there's more comedy in it, there it can be a little bit more challenging for me because I've done a lot more drama in my life. Yeah.
So what was your reaction when you first found out that there was going to be like a second variation of Sapphire?
I thought it was delightful. I laughed, especially when I heard the description of her. I was like, that's the best.
Did they get to
I love the show.
Did so somebody good. Get to pitch it to you, or did they just send you like a
script? No, they were just like, okay, so you'll be recording in the next 2-3 weeks on Wednesday. You'll come in, there'll be another character, Pad Paracha. And I was like, great. And then I got in and they described her to me. And then then you go from there.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exciting. It's like, I think that's something that's pretty unique about this show, and that they like it's built into it that all the characters of the same like type will have the same voice,
right?
Actor, even though the voices themselves are different,
right? Exactly.
What did you think about learning about the whole like group of off colors?
Oh, I love them.
Same.
I find them so moving. I find it moving that they've found each other and that they have purpose, and so on. Yeah, all of them are each in their own way very, and they it's just the love that I think I find the most impressive about their group and just who they are. For me, it's also just everything about the show for me is that, you know, it's like very much about love. It's very much about sort of acceptance of everybody because everybody's different, know, everybody's a little bit weird or off color, you know, if you dig deep enough, you know, and we all work pretty hard to hide it, but
right,
but it's there. It's there. So
she can't really.
She can't. And she never needs to. It's good.
Yeah,
being herself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I talked with the writers Matt and Ben, and they said it was a challenge to balance making her like
engaging without being like aggravating, you know? Like,
right.
'Cause it's like if she repeated everything that ever happened, it would be like, okay. Like,
right. Just the important stuff, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, when Mars dies and she's like 10 seconds later, yeah. She's like, wow, something incredible. Yeah. It's like, you're doing great. Is your approach different for both of them?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
It's comedic and dramatic, right?
Comedic and dramatic, mm-hmm. Yeah. Serious, not as serious. I mean, she's serious. She thinks. She thinks. But she's also just sweeter.
Yeah.
She's just, you know, Sapphire knows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she just knows, whereas Pat Paracha thinks she knows. And there's an innocence in that, her thinking she knows, whereas yeah. Sapphire knows that she knows, and there is a weight in her knowing
yeah.
that she knows.
She's just so earnest, it feels like, you yeah. know? Like, with all of her predictions, she's like, it makes you just want to hug her.
Aw. Thanks, guys. I know it's not me, but it is.
So do you think, like, who do you think can benefit the most from the whole off-color, like, the lessons that... You know, that acceptance.
People who in the world could benefit?
Yeah.
I mean, I think, honestly, everybody could. Because that's the thing. I mean, I feel like we all have that.
Right.
Every person, you know, I feel like when we sort of categorize people, there's so many ways and diagnoses and things that people can use to sort of decide somebody is a thing that they understand. But it's not... Then that allows you to put them off in a box somewhere and all that sort of stuff. But then it also allows you to attack yourself more for the things that are different about you. Mm. Because, oh, I shouldn't, you know, I'm close enough to the norm that I can fit it. But there is no normal,
mm.
you know. So I feel like the more people are willing to accept the people that seem even more different than them, the easier they'll be able to live their own lives accepting of their own inner quirks and differences.
It seems like it's really interesting looking at Sapphire and Pat Paracha, just because Sapphire is sort of, I don't know, like it's like a reminder of like the rigid structure of the homeworld and gem society and everything,
right? Yeah,
because she is like the aristocratic role, and then Pat Paracha is like the whole the other flip side of that coin, where they're just like living like exiled essentially from the whole place. What do you think about that?
I just think that there has to be a place for everybody in any society or group or community. And there is a place for everybody. It's just we decide that there are only so many places,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that there isn't a use for these other forms of perception
mm-hmm.
or beingness, you know. But there is, if we actually are open to seeing it.
There's always value.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for talking to me.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
The Steven Universe podcast is produced by Stacey Parra, Charles Abadje, and Conrad Montgomery. Special thanks to Rob Sorcher, Cartoon Network Studios, The Crooniverse, and Turner Studios in Atlanta. And coming up next Thursday, an episode on fusions. I've got AJ Mashaka coming in to talk about Stevani. Rebecca Sugar and Ian J. Q are going to return and give us some insight on the conception and development of fusions. And Steven Universe comic writer Grace Kraft is going to join us to share her discovery of the show, her journey to making comics, and why she loves Opal. So subscribe to the Steven Universe podcast now at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss out on this upcoming special episode. And please leave us a 5-star rating and review while you're there. I'm Mackenzie Atwood, and I will see you next Thursday.